I'm recording.
So am I.
Like a shitty poet at stand-up mic night. Yes, sister Slay. That slam poetry made no sense, but it spoke to me. I'm leaving that in. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Rewind Podcast. It's the podcast where we talk about all things story, movies, television, everything in between, comic books, Paddington 2, not Paddington 1.
No.
And Criterion Collection films. It's where Tim holds a microphone. It's where I eat mine. Welcome back to the channel. You may have noticed a few changes recently. We've started doing
Dungeons & Dragons because I'm a giant nerd, and I like to spend way too much money on books, and then
I thought might as well record them and might as well pay people to make assets. So you've probably noticed the channel's had a makeover. We have a new intro to this podcast.
Heck yeah.
Tim and I are vibing. Tim's in front of real movies. I'm in front of AI-generated fake ones.
Yep.
Tim, how are you doing?
Great. It has been a minute since we have done this, hasn't it?
It has been a couple month of roomies,
I
think.
All summer, pretty much.
Well, that's because I was dead all summer. I was actually the dried, desiccated, mummified corpse. They found me at the bottom of a new pyramid out here in the Sonora, and they have slowly dripped water on me for the past 3 months until I'm back to what I am.
You're like SpongeBob and Patrick when they dry out in the SpongeBob movie.
Yeah. Literally, David Hasselhoff had to swim me to the beach and then had to swim me back.
I kept reading and editing stories about Phoenix hitting a like record heat wave, and all I was thinking was, gosh, I hope Ryan's doing all right. So
our station, instead of giving us pay raises and better benefits, made these t-shirts that say we survived 50 plus days of 110 plus degrees. And they handed them out to everyone and not just the people that actually go outside in the heat. And that annoyed me. But
nothing
I
like
it.
A free t-shirt and a pizza party instead of a pay raise.
Yeah. And for real, bro. And I can't even wear it because the green screen, it's the exact opposite color as
screen.
So it causes like weird pixel shading. So I can't even wear it on the show.
That stinks.
Which is lovely. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. Hey, you know what I saw yesterday?
What did you see?
I saw Gareth Edwards' The Creator.
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet. I've heard a lot of mixed things about it, but I'm gonna go see it tomorrow night on like a discount.
You're seeing it tomorrow, discount Tuesday,
like
baby.
$5.
Yeah, that's probably the only amount of money you should spend on it because it was mid.
That's the issue I have with like Gareth. It's Gareth Edwards, right? Yeah. Just his movies frustrate me because he always hits this third act set piece that knocks me off my feet, that I almost forget that the first like two acts were like just the characters were boring
or slow or
watch the end of like Godzilla 2014, right, and that thing kind of rips. Mm-hmm. You know, but you forget the first like two acts with the soldier and his wife and him trying to get back, and you just don't remember their names like like now, or whoever the characters are in Rogue One. It's gonna be honest, that movie's kind of mid too, I can't lie. So
you mean Jyn Erso and Cassian Andor?
The only reason I know Andor is from the Disney Plus show, which was actually pretty solid.
Good. And had nothing to do with Gareth Edwards.
Exactly.
I like Gareth Edwards in that he is a giant nerd and he wants to take the things he sees in his head in the shower and put them onto film screens. But I also don't like Gareth Edwards because of the exact same reason. And it's because it's really cool in your head and then it doesn't translate super well sometimes. 2014 Godzilla, I unironically thoroughly enjoy that movie. But again, it's only for the 14 minutes that Godzilla is on screen. Not the 2 hours of rest.
I'm still not over the like build up to the Hawaii airport fight and then them just cutting away from it.
And they cut away! Bro, we get one of the best sense of scale shots in cinema.
It's so good.
Where we're looking out of the departure terminal and a giant foot lands and it's bigger than the planes. And you go, this is fucking awesome. And then
that's it.
That's it.
Yeah. Cuts away.
And also, not having Mothra in the first one, shame on you.
Yeah.
Shame on you. You should have had Mothra immediately. Mothra is bae. Love
Which
you, Mothra.
Which one was Mothra in? The second one?
King of the Monsters, yeah. The second one. Yep. And then doesn't Mothra die in that or something?
Think so. And then they put in like the that was three-headed one in Godzilla versus Kong.
King Ghidorah. Yeah. Yes.
Which I had a great time with Godzilla versus Kong. I can't lie. It'd been like months since I'd been to the theater.
Even though,
I got into one of those like shaky seats that move along with the action.
Not D-Box, bro. Not D-Box.
Don't I had it down like to the lowest setting because I didn't want to puke. But I remember just having a good time with my friends watching that one. But yeah, I feel like I should watch more classic
movie
Godzilla movies.
Too.
I haven't really.
Yeah. You should. There's like 700 of them. You can watch them every day for like the entirety of a Phoenix summer. It'd be fun.
Sounds good.
Have more movies at the end, probably.
Probably.
So yeah. Mid, super visually aesthetically pleasing. The creator, again, we're back on the creator. Like, it's got that retro futurism tech vibe that I love, where everything has to be touched physically and, like, moved physically. Everything's tangible. Very original Alien, where they're on this super advanced starship, but it's just a semi in space. Like, very, everything makes sense, is industrial. He shot it on 70s anamorphic lenses.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to have the 70s look, and you can tell the bokeh is wild sometimes.
Oh, neat.
He
also shot it on like a camera he got Best Buy too, right? Like a.
He shot it on a Sony FX3, which is a $3,800 cinema camera. In that it totally is a cinema camera. I don't know why I did that. It actually is. And his reasoning behind that was that by doing that, he could have a smaller camera crew, and they could take the money they had from not having the giant camera crew for the big, better cameras to travel the world and actually shoot on location, which they did. They go to eight different world locations to film this movie, but it's just sad that they went to eight different world locations for a non-cohesive script that has tonal messes everywhere. It's just messy. You'll watch it. You'll probably be like, that looked cool, and then walk out of the theater.
Yeah, that's what I'm expecting at this point.
So yeah, the creator, I saw that. But Tim, we're not here to talk about Gareth Edwards. What film did we watch?
We watched Double Indemnity, which is a 1944 noir film directed by Billy Wilder. I think I suggested this one to you. We're planning on kind of going back and taking it, you know, using the name of the podcast like it should be and rewinding.
Yes, we're rewinding,
looking back at older movies. So I suggested this one because I bought the 4K at the Criterion sale and had wanted to revisit it because I watched it in my film history class like years ago, and I just wanted to, I remember liking it a lot, wanted to revisit it without the academic side of everything. So what did you think of it?
I watched it on Google TV Plus. Thanks, Google. You can sponsor us at any time. And I thought that I had seen the movie before, but it was the realization that I'm not sure if it was this movie or just the tropes that were set by noir films in the 30s and early 40s have just carried on so one-to-one exactly through film over the decades that I was every single twist and turn I saw from the beginning of the movie, I was like, this is going to happen, this is going to happen, that's going to happen, and this is going to happen. And I was correct. Yeah. And that's not a bad thing. It's just going, oh, we're in history class right now. Hi, welcome to Film History 101. It's you see camera angles, and I'm like, oh my goodness, they are so dreamy.
The use of shadows.
And it's because there's Vaseline on the lens. And
the use of shadows and somebody lighting a cigarette in a dark room, it just...
And the whole room lights up because the gaffer went
ding
and hit and three lights turned on. And you're like, yes, I love this. I love old school filmmaking. There are definitely some problematic things. That's because it's 1944. And we're media literate enough to acknowledge the problems of the past and accept that we can't change them in a film. We can just address them as they are. There are some problematic elements, and then we can... talk about them, and we can talk about the rest of the film, because there were a few moments I was like, that is a white guy pretending to be of Latin heritage. That is rough. That is the worst thing I've ever seen. And he's an idiot? Oh my god, bro. What? How awful. I was watching that and visibly cringing. I was like, like watching this movie where everyone that worked on it is dead.
Yeah.
I was,
there's nobody alive anymore.
I was like, So, but I think it was good for the most part.
We kind of watched in context. It was like the first movie we watched in our film history class. It was kind of like, this is where movies ended up. And he kind of, you know, and then he went back to like, you know, whatever Thomas Edison was doing in his like garage with all the like moving frames. And we built up to basically back to Double Indemnity, where things went from movement. And
what did Edison call those? I can't remember. Penny shows, nickel shows,
something like that. I can't remember. That's,
it was like he had like an arcade and it was a bunch of the standing ones and you look down into it and you pay money and then it plays for you and it's like a 15 second clip and you go, wow, that was the best thing I've ever seen. And then you move on.
It's not like a, I don't think it's Nickelodeon. Those are like the cheaper theaters that you could see.
Yes.
But I can't remember. Gosh dang it.
And the creators of SpongeBob.
Thanks. Yeah. So
thanks, Nickelodeon.
But I just, I liked it. I thought the dialogue was really good, even if it was a little cheesy, hard-boiled every now and then.
Yo, the 40s slang was wild. I could go around the block with it a few times. I'm like, what do you mean? What are you talking about? What's happening right now? I loved that he and, what was his boss's name?
Yeah.
Key? 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 They would have this argument. He goes, I love you too. And then he would snap light a match for him and light his cigars. I'm like, first off, that's cool, bro. You're a cool dog. Snap lighting cigarettes or matches is, what a skill, bro. What a skill. Oh, and he's calling her, I love you, baby. I'm like, oh my god, what am I watching? This is wild. This is wild. I don't think he says her name more than like three times.
Yeah, he just calls her baby the whole time.
It's all right, baby. I'm thinking about you, baby.
We'll run away. I'm crazy about you, baby.
I'm crazy about you, baby. It all has to work. He's got to be on the train, baby. Yeah. Straight down the line. I'm like, that's not a phrase nowadays. That is a train phrase, and America gave up on those. That's...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very interesting look into... God, how long ago was that now? Like 80 plus?
Be about 80 years ago now.
That's so long ago. It's so long ago. Imagine being immortalized on film, and it's just because you say, hey, let me, baby, for 2 hours, an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Oh, man. What a movie. It was interesting. It was definitely a studio film. Like, it met all the, like, bing, bing,
it's like
bing, bing, done.
Steeped in Hays Code, too. Like,
yo, for real. They don't show blood in the same scene as the gun. It has to be a separate scene. They carry the dead bodies out, and you don't see him die. They carry the body out, and you don't get to see the front of the body. You can only see, like, the shoulders and legs.
Yeah.
She shows her ankles, and he's like, I was thinking about that anklet. Oh, mama. And I'm like, oh, my God. I kept thinking about that dame and how her ankle met the bottom of her legs. I was like,
okay.
Ooh, it's
getting spicy
in here. Yeah. Oh man, they make out on a couch and then it cuts away and they're just still fully clothed on the couch.
It's like
and it's like did they
what happened there?
Did they and then get fully dressed back up again and he put his shoes back on? Or did they just have, like, a high school makeout sesh and went, all right, let's murder a guy, baby.
The shoes stay on.
Hey, you need traction. Okay, that's...
Like, at least, Casablanca had the idea to cut away to a lighthouse when they start making out.
Right.
So.
Right. Plus, Casablanca is a better film. I did like Double Indemnity, don't get me wrong, but Casablanca, man,
that's
what
so
a masterpiece that is.
But I like the just noir, seeing like where the tropes come from, I guess. Just like knowing like movies like this are what Blade Runner ripped off 40 years later and just threw it in a sci-fi mm-hmm. setting, or...
You mean, did better?
I mean, I would say it definitely improved on the formula, yeah. But oh, I had okay. the... I don't know if I would count... gosh, who's the android lady in Blade Runner? I can't remember her name. I don't know.
I'm blanking yeah. on it too now that you've forgotten.
But, so. I don't know if she would fit the femme fatale, like...
No. Archetype. She's more a damsel in distress, yeah. which is kind of like...
But I just find it, like, the whole, like, femme fatale, especially coming out of, like, World War II, where you can tell, like, a lot of men felt kind of...
In World yeah. War II, 1944, yeah. bro. We're still but in it.
Just, like, and especially people's feeling, men, especially feeling insecure as women, were kind of taking up more of the workforce and kind of... Yeah.
And we have women doing murders yeah. now. Come on, that's a guy. So. What are you yeah. doing? That's the man's job.
Right? Yeah, I just think that's just an interesting like reaction to that whole thing. Like they're just so scared of women taking their place and being just invading that with which you know they're fine. Men are still just
yeah. They look. I'll let you in on a secret. Men are, especially white men, are quite insecure. Yeah. and they tend to take it out on society as a whole instead of addressing their own issues. I would know. Yeah. I'm a white guy.
Same.
So Double Indemnity, I was wondering while I was watching it, I'm like, I wonder how this was perceived when it came out. Like, how well did it do? And it was 4x3 for the Criterion Cut as well, right?
Yes. Yeah.
See, that was wild to me, but I'm like, it's the 40s. Everybody was 4x3, of course. But man. Plus, this movie would have cost like double the budget if they had to do 16x9. If they had to do widescreen.
Oh, yeah.
2.35:1, shoot at 70mm. In the studio
yeah,
system?
Yeah, no, that wouldn't work.
Where they're in like two aircraft hangars right next
yeah,
to each other, and they're pretending that's the entirety
their butt
of LA.
Off the whole time.
Dude, for real, they looked miserable at some points. You could tell they've been on set for like 14 hours.
Yeah.
And this is the take that was finally good. And they're like, yeah, well, whatever. Well, they'll watch it anyway. Yeah. Right, baby.
I guess it fits how miserable the characters are. So
that is true. That is true. I did love the overdramatic, like,
yeah,
they got shot. Or, yo, when he gets shot and he's like, can't you do better, Dame? Yeah. Women can't shoot yeah. straight. I'm like, whoa, what is happening?
Yeah, and then
he's like, let me come into the light. Maybe it'll be easier yeah. for you to kill me. Oh, dude.
It's so good.
Look, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'll probably order it on Criterion. I might not ever watch it ever again.
That's fair.
But it was... What a vibe-filled, wonderful time. It was yeah. crazy.
I liked, yeah, and I think Billy Wilder also, the director, was one of a German that escaped before World War II and was making movies throughout Hollywood
yes,
with that, kind of like
so.
Fritz Lang, I think that, yeah.
Yes.
And I just find that interesting that you just his whole story, just escaping and still, and just coming to Hollywood and making some of those like all time classics, just as the war is going on. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
So.
And you know, they had no budget.
Oh yeah.
At all. Especially during wartime. No, you have
yeah.
no money. that money's going. So history lesson, viewers, America used to work together to function societally. And when a world war happened, we were able to fight as one, like a national unit.
Crazy thought.
That would never happen again because of the evils of capitalism.
No.
And how they've separated us from ourselves. speaking on tone deafness, the creator had issues with how it represented America and everything. Because it's like, is this Vietnam or
yeah.
not? I don't know. So it was, is it Vietnam or is it a commentary on the Iraq-Afghanistan conflict? Which it's failing
yeah.
at both.
He's not a good enough writer to take on things like that.
He's not. I need him to get better writers, bro, and just let him be the vibe at it.
Yeah.
Hey, make it look cool. Here you go, director. Back to Double Indemnity. I apologize. The whole train sequence was really well done. They actually shot on location for a few things in this film, and you could tell because they were shooting on location in the middle of the night, and the film stock was very low ISO.
Yeah.
Because it's grainy as hell. It's fighting for its life. The shadows are dancing, that kind of thing. But that whole sequence was interesting and fun. And
I like how it's just weird. I feel this weird, like, middle of the road thing where I'm almost rooting for him a little bit to get away with it.
But he's a motivator.
Yeah,
he's
a I don't know. You're just like, are they going to do it? Are they going to get away with it? And then you see that guy in the caboose with him, and you just know, like, that's going to be the thing that takes him out, that he sends away.
Yep.
So, that's a really good sequence that you're just kind of... It's really good use of tension, I would say. So
he's like, hey, can you give me my cigars? Car 2 Bunker Lemon or whatever. All right, thank you, baby.
And then the guy walks out, and he jumps off the back of the train, and it's going like 15 miles an hour. And I'm like, my God, you're fine, bro.
And I think, like, that's going to be a good, like, cover for a a murder.
They're like, we found his body. He broke his neck jumping off a train. Falling off a train.
Like,
it's like at 15 miles an hour?
What?
And there, it's, if anything, this movie's just a super interesting time capsule into the reality of 1944.
Yeah.
She says there's a national speed limit, and I'm like, what do you mean? Or state speed?
She's like, there's a speed limit in California, and it's 45 miles an hour. And he's like, how fast did you think I'm going? She's like, maybe 90. And I'm like, oh my God, stop flirting. You guys are gross. You're gonna murder someone.
But that was a thing. There were at one point statewide speed limits. That's not a thing anymore because it quickly became impractical.
Yeah.
I think that stopped being a thing like in the 40s as well.
I can imagine.
And I've seen her before, the lead actress. I've seen her. I can't remember which of the holiday movies it is, but it's one of the ones where she is a article writer for a newspaper or something, and she's pretending that she is this wonderful white person's dream of American mom, stays at home, takes care of the kids, has this wonderful cottage life. But it turns out that's not true at all. She's a single woman living in an apartment in New York City or Chicago. And she's got to meet her boss for the first time, and the boss wants to meet her husband and her child, which she does not have. So they have to come up with this whole fake scheme where she gets some dude to play her husband. They borrow a baby from like a friend or something.
That sounds great.
And it's actually a good movie. It's a good movie.
Is that like a screwball comedy? Kind of sounds like it.
It's a holiday film. Like it's around Christmas time. And it's got this German guy who is like her best friend / butler? Cook person? I don't know. It's really weird. And they're like lying, but it turns into this like sweet love story because she actually falls in love with somebody there and then actually gets a real husband and like they have a real relationship together and stuff at the end. I cannot remember it for the life of me. It's one of those movies. Our Christmas traditions were watch a set of film every year when the grandparents come to town. And it's one of those. I can't remember what it's called. And man, those old Christmas movies are problematic, man. There's some problems in them. I think it's Holiday Inn where they have like Lincoln's birthday celebration and they all do blackface.
Oh,
and
no.
I want to die. I actually want to.
Is it?
Bing Crosby should never be in blackface. It's like
Christmas
the worst thing I've ever
in
seen
Connecticut?
In my life. Yes. Okay. That's it. Christmas in Connecticut.
And the actress's name is Barbara Stanwyck.
Yes. The moment she walked out, I'm like, she's not a murderer. She's a writer for a Chicago newspaper. Or something like
that.
Christmas in Connecticut.
Okay.
It's a good movie. It's a good movie. Watch it for Christmas.
I think I will.
Watch it for Christmas.
Sounds nice. I like watching classic.
And Muppet's Christmas Carol.
Oh, always.
Yeah, watch Muppet's Christmas Carol. Every Christmas. Remember? Weird tangent. Were you there when it was Christmas at the station and I pulled it up on my laptop and just watched it the whole way.
Just watching
way
it at the, on the Sports Center TV.
Because nothing was going on. And I'm just over there like, it's in the singing of a sweet corner choir. Just watching them up at Christmas Carol.
I think I joined you for a little bit.
I could not get away with that here. Yeah, you did. We had a few people cycle through watching Muppets.
I had to like jump in and out because I was editing the shows, but those take like 10 minutes. So
it does take like 2 seconds, dude. I occasionally have to help edit here. It's like the worst thing I would do in my life. It's so easy, bro. It doesn't matter how big your market gets. It's baby stuff. Yeah. We edit on Final Cut, so it's like even easier.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. Plus, I edit every day now. Every day at work. Because we shoot the story, we edit the story.
Nice. That's good.
How a photojournalist should be. I still don't want to work news, but there you go.
At least you feel like you're doing something. I stated.
I am, unless it's a bad story. Unless it's a bad story. Then I'm not. So, yeah, Double Indemnity, Christmas in Connecticut, double feature. Watch them back to back.
And if you like Double Indemnity, you could also watch Billy Wilder's other film with Marilyn Monroe called Some Like It Hot.
Some Like It Hot.
Which is a screwball, which is very funny. And I would recommend, if you haven't seen that one, to check that one out.
Is that also a Criterion box?
Yeah.
Love it.
It's like these two guys, they're like jazz players. And they witness like a mob hit, and they gotta go into hiding. So they like they dress up as women to hide in like a traveling band. And and they're trying to like hide from the mobster that's coming after them, and like try to keep their secret identities, which it's very silly because you know you can obviously tell they're men.
It's
wearing lipstick and a wig, but it's like surprisingly it doesn't feel dated, even though it has like cross dressing and stuff for a joke. Like it feels
progressive.
Yeah, honestly. The final punchline's kind of funny, like where I don't want to spoil the movie, but basically he reveals to somebody that he's a man, but the guy's still like, "Yeah, I'll still marry you," because he's like,
"Yeah, I've seen that scene. Yeah. I've seen that scene." No, he's like,
"Nobody's perfect."
Yeah.
And then so
he's like, "It's all right, baby. We'll murder somebody together. Let me light you a match."
But
it's dude,
it's a good one.
That's good. I'll watch it. Yeah. I'll check it out. That's so wild. And then Marilyn Monroe's just
like has a romance with one of the guys who's like, when they're at a resort, he's trying to like play somebody else and like swapping back and forth between his like two identities. It's full screwball where it's just this point where everything just kind of hits ahead for the last 15 minutes and it's honestly pretty like gut bustingly hilarious at times, so I think it's great.
Love it. That's all we need in life.
It was nice revisiting
good comedy.
Double Indemnity. I had a good time with it. I was surprised how engaged I was, even though I knew where I was going on a rewatch. So
don't tell anybody I took a nap and then I rewatched it and kept watching it.
That's fine. Don't worry about it.
No, that was a food coma, and I should probably watch my blood pressure. I just went, and I woke up, and it was like 20 minutes till the movie was over, and I'm like,
shoot,
great. And I rewound it. I watched it back on Rewind It Media.
There you go.
Bring it back. Should we have the show?
So what's the next one we're going to watch? What's your suggestion?
Some magical, problematic masterpieces of the 1980s. And, I mean, they made them up until 2001, but we're only talking about the first two. It's Lethal Weapon. Lethal Weapon 1 and 2. That's what we're talking
about.
I've
actually never seen the Lethal Weapon movies, so.
Oh, my God. Tim, I'm getting too old for that. Okay, that's no.
I do know that quote. But I kind of hit a point where I was like, maybe I should. And then I was like, maybe I shouldn't give money to Mel Gibson. So I was a little in the middle. But maybe I can find it at my library and I will watch him. But
Mel Gibson. What a monster.
But I think
Allegedly.
Yeah.
But you're thinking...
Don't sue me.
You're thinking we'll, like, stick with the... Just going back, watching movies from...
I think Rewind has a new direction. We're gonna go into the past. We're gonna explore vintage, retro. We're gonna look back in time. And when new things come out, of course, we're still gonna talk about them. But the whole vibe will be like, hey, you ever seen Lethal Weapon, man? You ever watched Lethal Weapon? You haven't. Well, guess what we're doing? That it's gonna be that vibe, right? We'll watch all the way up until the 2000s. We'll say, this will hurt me to say, we'll include the 2000s as retro. Anything from the 2000s and before, we'll call it retro. And by 2000s, I mean up until Obama. Anything past that is no longer the 2000s. That's the 2010s. They just didn't know it yet. So we'll do that. Like, I rewatched Jason Bourne recently, and I went, wow, 1999 be wild. And
wasn't that 2001, is it?
The original is 1999.
The Bourne Identity was 99?
Yeah. Ah! I was like, no! And then... So I watched the first three, and there's only three Bourne films.
I have the whole collection, which comes with the...
There's only three
Bourne films.
It comes
with two other discs that we don't...
That don't play.
I just put it in, and it's like, it's just a picture of Jeremy Renner with no context. It's like, just go watch The Hurt Locker.
You're like, I do like Jeremy Renner, so I'll just look at that for a bit. Ah, what a good-looking disc. And then you put it back in the case. Well, we might have to talk about the Bourne movies at some point. Who knows? But for now, thank you so much for watching the Rewind Podcast. I hope you guys enjoy the new show, the new direction the channel's taking. And thanks for waiting.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye, baby.